Hello and welcome to another Connecting Consciousness update. Today's the 28th and this is being recorded and it should go out on the 1st of July. So start with the updates really in terms of the news. Somebody had emailed me and asked me to have a quick look at Benjamin Fulford. It's not the first time asked to have a look at his stuff. And just generally I find it excellent and seems to match very closely with what I'm picking up. But this person was particularly interested in, there was one recent post from Benjamin regarding the possible nuclear explosion in the United States and and asking if I'd had anything or heard anything about this. And I definitely haven't. If I had, I would have put something on the website. I did look at that section on Benjamin's report, and it seemed to be implying that the negative cabal were looking at some form of retaliatory action. Now, I think many of us have been predicting some form of retaliatory action for some time, but we've never really got anything super concrete, and I certainly haven't yet. I wouldn't rule that out, but I certainly wouldn't want to go down the road of waving my hands in the air and saying there's going to be a nuclear explosion. Obviously, if I, and I'm sure if others, hear anything a bit more, then we'd know about it. I am of the opinion that the negative group are in a very difficult position at the moment. I don't think they've ever been so pushed up against the wall, and I guess they're sitting around the coffee table knocking about ideas, and it may be that that's one idea that's resurfaced again and has somehow leaked out. At this stage of the game, I would look on it just as another one of the many doomsday ideas that these rather sick people have actually put forward. I wanted to talk a little bit and stay on the theme of the United States for a bit. The interesting meetings that have been taking place by proxies on behalf of the President of the US and the Russian President. They're really important, and the Western media have only covered them as far as the headline news. Clearly, the NATO, the cabalistic control elements in Europe don't want to make a big thing of the fact that Russia and America are actually making friends and getting along together. That's something they don't want. So the media, the main media, have not covered it in anything like the detail that it should have been covered. And what I wanted to do was just to go into a little bit more detail. If we accept that both presidents of the US and Russia feel they're under pressure from a satanic cabal-led group, then it would make perfect sense to pool your resources. And one way to pool your resources is militarily. They've been working for some time on a joint economic project, but it's relatively new to think about America and Russia and doing anything more than just a joint exercise militarily. So there are meetings there are meetings coming up where it's not too far a stone's throw to envisage America and Russia looking at certain countries on the world and having a joint strategy towards them. So for instance, if there was a particular country that was controlled by a cabalistic satanic element that was hell-bent on really doing something quite bad, rather than America being the policeman of the world, it would now be America with Russia. And the point about that is that combined together, not just the military but the political strength would be such that it would silence some of the very negative forces who have been attacking Trump or Putin separately, but put the two together would be very difficult. And I'm talking about perhaps I won't name a country, but a country that was seeking to cause some great catastrophe or some issue. Well, then I wouldn't be surprised if America and Russia launched a joint military operation against not the people of that country but the leadership of that country. So that's something that's taking place. I'm going to have to look at a note because I can't remember this Russian guy's name. I don't usually take notes. It's all up here, but this person, I can't remember his name. The Russian general is a general called Gerasimov. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Gerasimov. He is the Russian equivalent. He's the Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman, the equivalent. He's that in Russia. Now, Durnford, General Durnford, is a Marine general, and those of you in the know are clearly aware that it is the Marines that are 100% behind the President of the United States. So Trump can call on the Marines, literally. So Durnford and this Russian, and Durnford is the Joint Chiefs chairman, he's the Joint Chiefs staff. They've been meeting, and they had a meeting, I think, in Helsinki. They've got another meeting coming up, and these guys are actually talking about joint military operations between Russia and America. But that isn't being covered, obviously, in the mainstream. Now, President Putin and President Trump are going to meet. Again, this isn't widely broadcast, but they're scheduled to meet in the middle of July. I don't have a date, but at some point in the middle of July, again, they are going to be looking at the rest of the year. In other words, how do they think the rest of the year is going to pan out? One of the issues they've got, looking across the globe, is that it's expected to be a number of civil unrests. Britain might be one of those. Whenever we get a long, hot summer in Britain, there are usually unrests. And a few years ago, we can remember some very serious riots in Britain. Possibly expecting something like that in European countries. So a number of countries might experience some civil upheaval. I can't say what the spark point is because I don't know, but I'm expecting some form of civil upheaval. And 3 weeks ago, I put on the website and talked about the fact that Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, was very near to being kicked out of office, very near, not by the people, but by their her own government. There's a real possibility that there are moves afoot to remove her. One of the issues here is that the Germans are fearing another round of very powerful demonstrations or riots in Germany. One of the ways they think of stopping that is to get rid of their chancellor. So I predicted that 3 weeks ago. Let's see what happens in the coming days. She's on a very, very sticky wicket, as we say. So really the focus is moving towards Europe after the American situation. And Europe, of course, contains some of the old guard in terms of the cabal. These people are the ones who are got nowhere to go. It's been like that for a while, but they've been able to dig into their reserves or, you know, use their friends to cover them. And that's really about rock bottom now. So we're expecting to see some issues in European countries, difficulties between presidents and their government or prime ministers and their government, people resigning. You know, I'd mentioned some weeks ago now that President Trump was waiting for a change in the Supreme Court. And I know a number of people, you know, quite genuinely had written to me and said, well, there's nothing in the media. And I said, well, just wait. Just wait. And then I think a couple of days ago, big announcement that one of the Supreme judges is resigning in July. Interesting, this judge is going to be resigning around about the time that the two presidents are going to be meeting. And the judge cited the fact that he wanted to spend more time with his family, but this was something that had been foreseen some time ago. It's important because the President of the United States is the guy who appoints the new Supreme Judge. So when one steps down, Trump will obviously appoint somebody who wants to take the fight against child trafficking, against pedophilia. It's very important that the Supreme Court is anti the cabal, because when those indictments are finally opened, there's going to be a whole avalanche of legal challenges, and that ultimately will end at the Supreme Court. So that is why that's important. That's why Trump has been waiting for this appointment. So that's important to know there. I think really that we know that the G7 is no longer the G7, it's the G6, because Trump has pulled out from that. And wherever there are instances of a non-democratic energy, Trump is actually removing himself from that. And some of these trade wars, the trade war with China, that's just political. That's purely political. And that's what you do when you're in office. But the trade war threatened to Europe is far more important, because Trump is not attacking the trade per se, he's attacking the cabal. So by putting a squeeze onto Europe, he's actually attacking a number of organizations that have sewn Europe up. So that's not political, that's actually more with teeth in it. So whereas I think Trump could probably pull back from a lot of the threats he's made to the Chinese regarding the trade war, he's less likely to pull back with Europe and more likely to push the tariffs through. So this summer could see some long-awaited changes. We could finally get something going. Goodness knows we've waited for it long enough. The other thing I'd heard was that President Trump was going to wait until he was halfway through his term of office, and that was a marker to the military in the US. And we're nearly at that halfway point. So that's it really. It's possibly one of the most important updates, although there's nothing specific in terms of dates and times generally. It does feel to me that we are literally standing on the edge of the springboard, waiting now to launch and to see some big changes occurring. I'm hoping we don't all get let down. I'm hoping that this can go through. So fingers crossed. So what I'm going to do now is hand over to Becky and ask her to read the questions out, please. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. The first question is from Shu, who says, are you all right? Thanks for organising the new show.
That's very kind, thanks. No, I've not been all right, actually. You know that those of you who've checked the website, obviously I lost a really beloved cat, my Ingmar. And it was difficult because the vets were treating from an infection point of view. But for over a month, been aware that I believed that it was reasonably terminal. It's funny because weeks ago he had a fleck or a mark appeared in his eye, and I thought that was an organ failure. I actually thought we had organ failure here. So although the vets were treating it as a possible infection, which could get right, I've known for the last two radio shows that he wasn't going to hang about, that he wanted to go. So yeah, the last couple of radio shows I've been a bit irritable, not quite myself. It's funny, you know, I can face some of the most hideous looking off-planet aliens that you can imagine, and cross swords with some of the most horrible people on the planet, and I'm not bothered by that. But when I lose a cat or a cat's sick, then that actually really does upset me. So thank you for asking, and I've accepted that he's left the planet now, he's gone. So yeah, we're back to normal now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And James says, please can you say something about the Stone of Destiny?
Oh, okay. This is the Stone of Scone, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Why it's important is that this was a dream. This was associated with a dream that Jacob had. Jacob was apparently using it as a pillow. It's a very uncomfortable pillow, but a good pillow. When he had the dream that the Bible reminds us of as Jacob's ladder. So it's considered a sacred object, and as such, the Knights Templars took an interest. The Knights Templars' job is to protect every sacred object, whether it be living or not living. And it was taken by one of the kings of England. It made its way to Scotland. One of the kings of England took it, and it was incorporated in the royal chair. So every time there's a coronation at Westminster Abbey, whoever is the king or the queen sits on the chair. But the stone of Scone was and will be fitted underneath. I say will be because I think there was, goodness knows, 1950 something, some students, Rag Week or something, they took the stone, and then a month later it was found 500 miles back in Scotland. So they'd obviously taken it and tried to return it back to Scotland. And of course, that highlighted the whole concept of the British Empire and the Commonwealth, and you can't treat people as you know, ignorant natives. And so the Scottish people were allowed to keep the stone, and it stays in Scotland except when a king or queen is being you know, inaugurated, anointed, whatever they do to kings and queens. And then the stone will come into England, be put back under the chair, and the king sits on it or queen sits on it, and then the stone goes back to Scotland. So the question is, what is so special about this stone? Well, because it has a biblical connection, and because it's understood to be a sacred object, it is believed that, this isn't in the media, but it's believed that when there's a solemn swearing of an oath, whatever that oath may be, then it gives protection and locks into the timeline the participants. Think of Jacob's ladder, which is ascending upwards. It's a timeline upwards. So the royal elite would want that at a moment of great oath, because it would protect them or secure them. In other words, nobody around them is going to find it easy to break that oath because this sacred object is there, although the audience is not aware of that. So it's a really good question. It is not just a trinket. It's a very powerful stone that had some connection with deities or creational forces. I don't mean Gaia or Source. I'm talking about living creature type entities, semi-reptilian entities who had that. The stone originally, I understand, had come from another building. Now, whether that was part of Solomon's temple, or whether it was brought in and used in Solomon's temple, I don't know, but this is why the Knights Templars took an interest in it. It's a good question, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Peter says, congrats on the new show. It's lights, camera, action when you want to make a movie in the 3D world. How is the recording of our life events made that goes into the Akashic Records?
Is it
a kind of resonance? And is this recording still going on after we pass over to the other side, after we die? Thanks, Simon, and best of luck, Pete.
Well, thank you. I can't see Hollywood giving me a contract to do a film. Maybe if it did ever do that and give me a contract on my life, I would use the money to start up a foundation of some sort. But no bad guy is going to give me any money to do good work. We've got to wait for the system to change. The Akashic Records are really important because they are as independent as you can get, but please don't make the mistake, they can be hacked. It is possible to hack them, and in the same way on the 3D world we can deduct secret documents by putting a black marker through them. It is possible for certain incredibly advanced races to remove themselves from the Akashic. Now you'd have to ask yourself, why would anybody want to do that? And if, for instance, you were, I use the word loosely, meddling in the affairs of humanity, and you knew that humanity was on the verge of obtaining the capability of, en masse, accessing the Akashic, or the military were going to be able to do it easily, then you might want to remove yourself from it for whatever reasons. Not necessarily always evil, but we'd have to question that. So when we live, we create energy, and that energy is rather like light onto an old-fashioned camera. You have the negative at the back of the camera, you open the shutter, the light comes in, and whatever the image and that is burnt on, projected onto the negative, and it's captured, and then you redevelop that, don't you, in the old-fashioned way. Well, if you imagine a continuous film running 24/7, and every living creature is that negative film, and that is being recorded. Every lifetime of a person on this planet is recorded. That's what it is. It's a record. What I don't know, and that's a really good point, is when you leave the physical body and your journey elsewhere before you come and accept another body, whether that is recorded. My understanding is it's not, because the Akashic is about a physical representation, not an intent of viewpoint. And then what's really, really exciting question is, okay, what about a 10th, 11th or 12th dimensional person who does not have a physical body, but has a crisscross framework body, except in the 12th dimension there's no body, it's just pure consciousness that keeps the energy together. Now, does that recognize in the Akashic, or because it's not physical it won't come through? I don't know the answer to that. However, the Akashic is reasonably accurate, but there have been attempts to travel back in time and make alterations to the Akashic, and some of those did happen. So yeah, that's my answer, and I hope that helps a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you. Elizabeth says, hello Simon, do you know what the strange trumpeting sounds are that are being heard from around the world from the sky? There seems to be more happening again. I hear them late at night in New Zealand, but they seem to be happening in other places around the world. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Okay, I've got absolutely no knowledge on that at all. My immediate check-in on that one, we could go to a very advanced form of Project Bluebeam, trying to emulate the biblical calling of the trumpets, which was, the Christ is returned, the dead will rise, which appears actually in some of the occult representations. It could be that it's not a sound you're hearing outside. It could be something that's been projected into your head or other people's heads for purposes that we don't know. So it's going to be along those lines, something like an advanced space vehicle that drops down its power so that it would go through a sound barrier. I don't think that would make trumpeting sounds. And if we take out some of the more obvious possibilities, and I think we're left with something not sinister, but something that certainly is worthy of more investigation. But I haven't had any of those reports come to me, and I haven't heard anything like that myself. But if it becomes widespread across the planet, then we're certainly going to have to, and continues, we're going to have to take that quite seriously. Thank you.
Thanks. Kyle says, hello Simon, as mentioned by Ted Marr, the frequency of the planet is accelerating. I am curious as to what this great energy shift will be like. Will it fully activate our DNA? And what will shifting dimensions be like?
Everyone will feel it differently. I mean, we're all physical, but we will feel it differently because everyone's an individual. But there'll be certain patterns that I think we can roll out and say, this is what you'll feel. But what I think is important to say is this has been going on for a while, and a lot of what I'm about to wheel out to you, you've probably been, many of you have been feeling for months, if not years. I sort of half jokingly say to people, it feels like you've climbed up Mount Everest, and you know, you feel physically or mentally exhausted, and there's no real reason why you should. It's literally, if we understand who or what we are, we're a physical body with something very special inside it. So if the planet is increasing its vibration, then that's no problem for the soul in our bodies. That's happily working with that. But the physical body was designed to work on this earth at the moment we were born. So if you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, your physical body was created to match the frequency at the moment that you were here. If you then move the goalposts, as we say, and you start ramping up the energy, your physical body is left behind. So what the soul in your body, your energy body, it has to say to your physical is, come on, you've got to keep up. So what you've got is time lag. So the soul in your body is racing ahead, keeping up, but the physical body takes 2, 3, 4 days, sometimes longer, to adjust. That's why the resonance isn't a natural increment movement. It's going in bursts to allow the physical to catch up. Was that answering the question, Becky, or did I miss out any bits?
Yeah.
Was it no? Okay, fine. Yeah, I hope that helps. But it's widespread, and it can only get better in terms of it can get more intense and more powerful. Oh, the other thing I wanted to add was that the higher the frequency, then the harder it is for cabal or evil people to operate on this planet. Mm. And it is not solely to do with that, but it's primarily, oh, the cat's waking up, primarily to do with dense, heavy energy, such as Satanism or child trafficking, that which had been hidden from the public eye for so long, now isn't. And, you know, people, not enough people are asking, why are all these things coming out now? You know, has the world suddenly got worse? No, this has been going on for a heck of a long time. But human consciousness now is not allowing these things to be hidden. And so it's coming up and being spotted. Now, who would be an evil person at this time on the planet? Because their game time is over. Their ability to do these shady deals and then, you know, sit back and not have any fear because humanity won't discover it in their lifetime. That's not on the cards now. What's happening is that people are discovering things. These things can't be hidden. And I've always talked about Jimmy Savile here because it's a very good point to bring forward. For 50 years, Jimmy Savile did what he did and was protected by the elite and got away with it. Then suddenly it all came out. Why did it come out? It came out because they couldn't sit on it any longer, because human consciousness was like a million tons of steam pushing at a valve. The valve has to open and the steam's got to go somewhere. So the higher the human consciousness rises, the higher the vibrational rate of the planet rises, and one feeds to the other, one gets the other going. So we're unstoppable now. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Part of the question was, will it fully activate our DNA?
No. We have to want that to happen. You could be working in a job, doesn't have to be a bank or insurance or anything like that. You could just have a job that has nothing to do with money, but you could be, uninterested in developments of the world. You could just be totally uninterested in everything except coming home on a Friday and putting your feet up, and that's your choice. So no matter how high this human resonance or the planet's resonance, if you are not choosing to challenge or ask questions, then you cannot increase your vibrational rate because it's not been your choice to do so. Only people who choose to do so will then tap in or connect in to that resonance rise, and they will evolve. So we use the word ascension. I mean, I use it very lightly, but that is the outcome for a combination of the planetary evolution and human evolution. So the planet will evolve, but there are a number of people who are quite happy not evolving. Thank you very much. And, you know, you meet those people every day, don't you? Thank you.
Thanks. Wang says, "Dear Simon, greetings from Singapore. Can you tell us what is the difference between full soul reintegration into our physical body and DNA retrieval? Thank you very much for what you're doing, Wang.
I'm trying to understand the wording. Can you give me the first one, which was about the soul, and the second one, which was about DNA, please?
Can you tell us what is the difference between full soul reintegration into our physical body and DNA retrieval?
Okay, just the first one, please, because right, why I'm struggling is that, first of all, the soul is in your body and doesn't need to be integrated into your body. If it wasn't, your physical body would just fall to the ground and you would be pronounced dead. So the soul is integrated into your body. It might be that you mean the terminology I call, which is activation or active, which is when the brain in your body accepts who you really are. I hope that's what you mean, because otherwise my explanation now isn't going to satisfy you. When a person becomes awake and aware, many different things occur. One of those things is the activation of the realization that the soul in their body is special. It's whatever it might be, whatever its history is. And the organic brain accepts that and allows the soul to communicate through the chemical and electronic pathways of the body. I mentioned before that it was a very common saying some 50 odd years ago, and it's nearly died out, which is the eyes are a window to your soul. It's not used anymore because the establishment, the control system, don't want to alert people to the reality, and that's one aspect of the reality. So that if a person is active, then you would see the real them through their eyes, which is a combination of the organic and the energy. I hope that's what you mean. What was the second part, please, Becky? That was to do with the DNA.
Yeah, what's the difference between that and DNA retrieval?
I'm wondering if you're meaning the 12 strands retrieval, retrieving the 12 strands. That's not the soul. The soul is your life force, which is in old money. It's about 18 inches long. It's American football shaped, rugby football shaped in Britain. You can see through the middle of it, but the edges are white, and then there's a blue, almost like ozone. I don't know what it is, but bluish light around the side. It does not sit over your heart. It sits between your tummy button and the part of your chest. That is the soul. That is who we are. The DNA strands, a very long time ago, humankind had 12 strands of DNA, which meant that incredibly advanced spiritually and aware. But the trouble, you know, with advanced spiritual beings is they get suckered or ripped off or conned by lower dimensional entities who are only interested in stealing from them. Giving a good example, North American Indians, and then the settlers, the white people who wanted to take the land or to put railroads across it or telegraph lines or look for gold mines or whatever it might be. And they would do deals which were not favorable to the local people, or if that failed, use the army to steal it off them. You know, we think about Captain Cook and others who landed on other shores, South America, think what happened in Australia, where local people were tricked or conned or suckered out of their birthright. So that actually occurs. And in the same way, a long time ago, humans had 12 strands, and the task force of reptilian or semi-reptilians conned them into losing some of that. So we are always trying to regain what is ours by birthright, but was taken from us. And this is something that hangs very close to our body, just out of phase. It's not in the third, it's not in the fourth dimension. And it is now possible, has been for the last few years, to begin to speed up that reintegration. So for me, there's a big difference between soul and DNA strands. I hope I've understood. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The next one is not a question, but John says, Godspeed and God bless to you, Simon. You assist in the work of God. So glad to hear a new radio show is on the way. Love and protection is with you, as it should be, and as it always was.
Thank you. Remember that I've insisted that these questions are taken in a numerical order, which means that the questions that we're now having now were a number of weeks old. Probably that was a question just when we were doing our first show. It doesn't seem topical now because it's out of date, but I felt the only true and fair way was to deal with this on a first-come, first-served basis. Thank you for that. Thank you. The radio show that we do now is more flexible, allows us, through the help of Becky, to get through the questions faster than we did on the old radio show. You can see me as well, and I think that's really important. And, of course, you can see the cats, and that's ever so important. As you can see, the white cat now is becoming quite a star. It's not up there with a Hollywood or a cat advert for cat food. But I promise you, I don't run around positioning cats or doing anything before I switch on. I switch on. That cat is wherever I am. So if I'm in here, that cat's here. So thank you for your question. Thanks for your love. It's very kind of you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And Patty says, welcome back, Simon. I've really missed your shows. We are told, in brackets, by David Icke and others, that the moon may be part of the control system and may exert a negative influence. Does that mean that people doing a full moon meditation may be inadvertently directing their energies towards a negative force? There are a few more questions. Do you want to take one at a time?
Yes. If we were to accept that the moon of today is not natural, and I accept that it's a construct, if we accept that the original moon was removed and this is put in its place, and we have no one better than Credo Mutwa to have a chat with. David Icke did some interviews with him. I've not seen all of them. I've seen some of them. And in the Zulu, if you translate it, it's along the lines of the moon was rolled into place. That's the way they would discuss it. And those of you who have very kindly listened to me over the months or the years know that I've always talked about how the Zulu nation was assisted by a reptilian faction, and that's why it became such a very powerful native force, take on the British Army, for goodness sake, and beat them in one battle, though they didn't win the war. And so the information they were receiving was far more accurate than you would otherwise have expected. So if we then take that forward and we say, okay, the moon is an artificial construct, is it wise to meditate on the moon? There are stories and old fables of people looking at the reflection of the moon in the river or the water and trying to catch it with a net. It is the one true story. It's a true story. In Great Britain, about 500 years ago, the tax collector was travelling around villages in East Anglia, eastern part of Britain. And the law was that if you were a lunatic, that's the word, isn't it? Lunatic, because it's after the moon. If you were insane, crazy, you didn't have to pay tax. You were exempt from tax. So this village got together to try to convince the tax man that they were, as a whole, they were completely crazy. So in the evening, they all sat around with nets, and then the full moon was out, and they were trying to fish the moon out of the pond. This is true. The tax man then dutifully said that the whole village was completely crazy and didn't have to pay any tax. I applaud people who come up with rather clever ideas. But remember, of course, that Princess Diana was labelled the moon goddess, and so she was slated to die before she was even born. So I personally wouldn't recommend meditating on the moon, because it's not a natural creation. The sun, I don't have a problem with the sun. I think the sun is positive, and I think, but do, you know, where's the fine line between meditation and worship? You know, when does meditation become worship? If you're meditating on an object, you can meditate on a candle flame. I suppose that's a small sun. But I personally wouldn't recommend moon meditation. Mm. Thank you. What's the other bits?
Yeah, the next part of this is, does this also apply to transcendental meditation, where the practitioner is given a mantra to repeat silently, but the mantra is usually associated with the name of an ancient deity? Can these practices invite unwelcome influences?
It's very strong with the Indian culture. It rather depends on, I think this will surprise you, it depends on you individually, your relationship with the deity. And it depends on what your intent is. The difficulty about this is that you are not connecting with source. You're not connecting with your higher self. You're not connecting with you. You're looking for this middleman, this God, this deity. Why not go straight to the boss? Why not go straight to source? If we accept that a lot of these deities are physically dead, but not energetically dead, and would seek to exert themselves back on the planet in a physical form, either by taking over somebody or giving messages to somebody or trying to manipulate somebody, you know, I've always said we need to be really careful. There are good deities out there, are good spirit guides, of course there are, but it's beholden on the individual for he or her to ensure that what they're connecting with is positive, and if they detect something that's not, then to cut it and come back. But regardless of all that, connect with source, connect with yourself. You don't really need the middle person. You know, that's what we do on a third dimensional planet. We want a product, we go to the middle person, which is a shop. We buy it from the shop. So let's not do that, hey? Let's just go straight to the person that makes it in the first place. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. This next question is from Brian. Dear Simon, thank you for who you are and what you do. I would love your take on this. And it's the video of the remote viewing session about the mantis by Brett Stewart. This is one where you, where Kerry Cassidy wanted to know your take on this also, and so you had a radio interview with her.
Oh, I remember that. It wasn't that long ago, but I don't remember things unless it was like 5 minutes ago, because there's so much going on. I do remember that. In fact, I got into a very helpful and useful conversation with Brett Stewart afterwards. And I'm glad I did, because Brett was able to clarify some points. I'd not taken him to task. I mean, it may have seemed that way, but I knew that some of the information he had was not accurate. So what am I supposed to do? Just sit here and just say, oh, well, you know. I wanted to say, well, Kerry had asked me my point of view, so I gave my point of view. And that was good, because in the after conversation with Brett, it became apparent that he said that he wasn't aware there was a difference between insectoid races and mantid or mantis races. So he had been lumping, if I can use it, he'd been lumping together or bringing in together mantid and insectoid. And my point was that, yeah, there probably are negative mantises out there, but we can't just blanket everything. And a lot of the drawings that have been related to were not true mantis, they were much more insectoid. And there'd been a YouTube video, something like, it says mantises or mantis all you need to know. And a lot of Brett's presentation appeared to me to be lifted from that video. And I was saying to Brett, look, I have personal experience over 50 plus years with these beings. and I've not watched a video on it, formed an opinion on a video. What I've done is I've just told you what I've experienced. And there is a big difference between insectoid races and mantis. Now, if we'll go right back to just after Roswell, there was a very interesting crash. There's loads all over the US, but there was a very interesting crash. And in one of these particular craft, they were insectoid. They weren't mantis, they were an insectoid race. And a number of high-ranking members of the government, because back in those days, the military and the industrial complex hadn't taken control. It was still the civilian administration. It was still the president and, you know, his men around him who called the shots. It was only a few years later that the industrial military complex then basically sidestepped them. But there was an interesting case where this particular craft had come down and a number of these government officials had been taken there and got inside the command capsule, got inside the control room, and very, very shocked at what they saw. Now, there was a film loosely modelled on this, and it was a British sci-fi film, and it was called Quatermass and the Pit. Quatermass and the Pit. And if you haven't seen it, it's well worth a watch. It really is. Because ultimately, the spacecraft that they get into has got this... You'd think they're mantis, but they're not. They're insectoid beings. And this program was modelled... I think Quatermass and the Pit was filmed in 1959... And the real happenings were late 40s, and that's something really worth watching. So all I said to him was, there's a big difference between mantis and insectoids, and you are actually referring to insectoids. And he actually accepted that and said, yeah, he said, I've obviously, you know, I see the connection there. So that was great. So the book he was talking about was the Aranja book. Was it Aranja book, Becky?
Aranja book, yeah.
Aranja book. And I'd said that I wouldn't be interested in that because it appeared to me to have a Sumerian satanic connections. I think the number 666 was used in the Aranja book, and there were several other very reptilian stroke satanic control system numbers that came up. I'm very suspicious of anything that says 144 or 666. That's my alarm bell, and I walk away from something like that. I believe the Aranja book was channeled, and I believe there's a lot of controversy over exactly when it was channeled. Some people say it was very early, some say it was the 1970s. No, I discount that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Philip says, Donald Trump is dealing with the Illuminati as I write this message. QAnonPost.com is dropping information every day now since about October last year, and the information is quality. He signs off as Q, which is his security clearance. I suspect this guy is an operative. There's a link to the Q videos.
Thanks.
Which I've not seen ever. And he says, it has been an internet sensation. The evidence is overwhelming.
Yes, not surprising really. If you were to form a military government, which of course they have in America, you have for the first time a military government running your country. And the reason that you have a military government is because the military had given up with the politicians. They'd just given up completely, and they were so terrified that the founding fathers' vision was going to be turned on its head. And the Constitution was going to be completely destroyed, that they felt that this was their last chance to save America. And it sounds really dramatic, but actually that's exactly how they felt. And that's why you have the Marine General Dernford. Actually, he's the spokesman for the group of generals that put Donald Trump up to being president. It was the public, it was the citizens that voted for Trump. But it was the generals who said to Trump, we've got your back. You know, if you want to do this, we've got your back. So they have to get their opinions and their viewpoints out. They can't do it through the president because that would compromise the president. They can't do it through the CIA or the NSA because there is a structure that you call it an operative. It's not quite an operative, but I know what you mean. That individual is a much better term here. That individual would have to come under the authority of somebody, supervisor, line manager. So what you had to have was an independent person who either was retired or, I don't mean retired in terms of 65 years old, I mean retired, could be in your 30s or 40s, but retired from the business, who would receive anonymity, would be protected, but would be able to release information that it would be embarrassing for others to release. And embarrassing, what I mean by that is that if an operative, in the true sense of the word, gave out information, that could endanger somebody else. You could backtrack through that to find out, and it might put other people at risk. So you need a totally independent person to drop your information, and that's what's going on there. So yeah, it should be good because it's coming from the top. Not everything that Q is saying is coming to fruition. A lot of it is what's planned and hoped for and is predicted, but on maybe a different timeline. But yes, I don't have an issue with Q. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Tink says, "Hi Simon, I'm very happy to see you continue this important journey despite the recent obvious obstacles placed in front of you. You are a true inspiration to humanity. Question: considering the controlling and dominating nature of the Draco Reptilians, has any other entity or entities attempted to specifically assassinate the King of the Dracos, King Anu?"
No, they don't need to, simply because his own family would do it at the drop of a pin. The whole problem with the royal household within the Draco line is that each and every contender for the crown is looking for an opportunity to take that crown. And so the predominance of the High Lord Emperor, High Lord King, however his title is translated into English, his job is to divide and rule. His job, as he sees it, is to keep all his underlings busy so that they can't plot against him. And that's been the way it's been for goodness knows how long. So you've got your immediate family, not especially males, because females can take the crown, but usually males. And then you've got the more distant relatives. Very, very strict rules about who can and can't become the new leader, but you've got them. And as the king or the emperor, whatever you want to call it, you've got to keep these guys busy. And if you look at our own history, that's why one son was given command of the earth and the other son was given command of the sky, knowing full well that there would be some sort of crossover between the two. When does the earth become the sky and the sky become the earth? In terms of, well, if I'm flying an aircraft 500 feet off the surface of the earth, who's in charge of that? If I've got an installation device that's fixed on the earth but is sending signals out into space, which one of the suns is responsible? And there were a number of facilities that they had joint responsibility for. Here's the clash point. So that was all deliberately built in so that these lads were fighting amongst each other rather than turning their attention to the boss. The only way the boss can be deposed is literally when all of the family or all of the group then work as one to remove the leader. The problem here is how AI is affecting, remember AI has a satanic element to it, and how that is affecting all living creatures at the moment, to a lesser or greater extent, and indeed that is quite a contender for the reptile race. I hope that answers it. Do you think that answered it, Becky, or not?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good, so, yeah. Thanks.
Okay, John says, Simon, with your contacts with ETs, would it be possible for you to arrange a filmed interview with one and show it to the world, or arrange a demo of their ships appearing at a certain prearranged time and place for a large amount of the population to see? Thanks, John.
I'm taking that as a serious question. I'm treating it as a serious question. What you can do is you could, maybe it's $1,000. Dr. Stephen Greer takes groups up to the desert area, and then you get a chance to see flying saucers, UFOs, whatever you want to call them. I don't generally charge $1,000, but people have come with me and we've seen them on a hilltop for a price of a drink in a pub and a sandwich. If we accept, first of all, that every government on the planet is fully aware of the truth, it'll have absolutely no effect on them at all. If we accept that the vast majority of human race are controlled, and terrifyingly so, what would be the effect of a big fleet of alien spacecraft sitting over London, White House, Eiffel Tower, Kremlin, etc., etc., as we've seen on so many Hollywood films? And then those spacecraft disappear. Sadly, the vast majority of the human race would shake their head and say, I've just imagined it. They wouldn't choose to believe it. Now, I remember once being interviewed some years ago by someone from the BBC who said, well, when you go on these spaceships, Simon, can't you steal a ray gun or something? And that was exactly what he said. Can't you steal a ray gun or something? And then you can prove to the world that what you're saying is true. And my reply was twofold. The first one was, actually, that would be the biggest betrayal, and I would never be invited back again. That would be the end of my connections. And secondly, this isn't a Dan Dare comic, and they don't leave ray guns sitting around on tables, and they don't need them when dealing with humans. How many genuine contactees or abductees have talked about seeing armed aliens? They don't carry them with humans. They don't need to. The more important aspect here is that it's about self-development. It's about free will and choice. Because if it would take thousands of spaceships and a great military force and parading up and down, that is an invasion force. That is... it's not about humanity coming to a decision on its own. It's about being, as we say in Great Britain, slapped round the face with a wet fish. It's literally the hand in the face. Here it is. And that isn't a way for people to learn. The deal that most ET races have with the United States of America, and therefore every other government by proxy, until very recently, was that the American government would announce disclosure, that the Americans would be honest and upfront, and then the other governments of the world would then feel they could follow suit. And that's been reneged on time and time again. And that is why over the last 25 years, but not exclusively, because we can go right back to the time over Washington, D.C., where fleets of spacecraft, either from Antarctica or indeed from another dimensions, have made flypast. Think of all the things you saw in Mexico a few years ago as a push towards governments to say, if you don't do what you've said you'll do, we will put you in such a position that you'll have to, and then if you still don't, we're actually going to do it for you. So the in-your-face type of disclosure has been seen as the very last method. Now remember that evil, bad guys don't want disclosure. So reptilian races don't want disclosure because it's the end of their control system. It's only the positive, benign aliens that actually want disclosure, but they want it as part of a development of humanity, development in terms of your ability to control the nuclear weapons, ability to understand that everybody should have access to drinking water and food, that real medicines that work shouldn't just be for the elite. So they don't look at on disclosure as just this one standalone aspect. They see it as part and parcel of the development of humanity that should go hand in glove, as we say, with everything. Whereas the negatives, such as the Greys, certainly the reptilians and other groups, heck, they don't want disclosure, because then it's all out in the open and it's the end of their programs. Remember also, there are a number of military organizations that don't want disclosure. A great deal of abductions are created by black ops military alien groups, who then give the individuals a screen memory of an alien. So they believe they're being abducted by aliens, and the reality is that in those number of cases, they're actually being abducted by the military. So there's a lot at stake here. I have had, and it's documented, in 2015, I did a conference that I organized, the only one I did, such a lot of hard work. I've got such respect for people who did it, but I did it with the help of one other person, a couple of other people. And I'd gone out on a sky watch, took someone with me, and yes, we got a spacecraft that appeared, and we filmed that, and that I showed to the conference. So unlikely to get hundreds of spacecraft, because that would set every alarm bell ringing in every country, and then you might start some sort of battle. So I can see why you'd want that. The question is, when humanity is ready for it, it'll happen. Well, thank you. It was a good question, and I hope I've answered it well. Thanks.
Thanks. Ingrid says, "Hello, Simon. I'm so happy to be able to continue listening to you on your new radio show. Having said that, my question is about a cat. Many years ago, while living in the country in the States, I was outdoors and a cat came out of nowhere. I didn't even see him approach. He was very affectionate, rubbing against my legs. He followed me inside the house. I too gave him love, fed him. He stayed for 4 days and then disappeared. I never saw him again. My question is, can there be a significance about this cat appearing and disappearing? Well, I'm not sure if this is a dumb question, but I have always wondered about it till this day, and it gives me much joy to remember it. Thank you, Simon."
Well, first, thank you for saying what you said. I appreciate that. You know, I do the radio shows because I feel it's important, and if people are getting something out of it, then I'll continue. The cat thing is interesting, because on the first point, it could just easily be a normal cat that was on its journey, found you. You're a nice person, came along, you fed it, looked after it, and then checked out of the motel and off it went. That's possible. Let's look at something more interesting. Let's say, for instance, that is possible, that's exactly what it is, but you had an association with that animal from, excuse me, either from this lifetime or a past lifetime, and it'd come back to visit you. Then let's look at the possibility that it wasn't a cat at all. It was something else that gave you a screen image of a cat. What's not fully understood is that some of these holographic images can appear to be solid. They can make a noise when they walk. You know, why do you think people hear doors opening and closing when there's no one else in the house, and footsteps, you know? So that's really possible. So it could either be just a real cat that had called in on you. It could be a real cat that had called in on you, but deliberately so, because you were meant to find it at that time. It could be a non-human entity that had taken the guise of a cat and wanted to associate with you. It's obviously benign. There wasn't a problem there. It's obviously a message for you, specifically for you. And what I might suggest you do is those 4 days, it's a shame you might not have kept a diary, but perhaps write down what you can. For instance, I'd be interested in, how did it disappear? did you leave the window open one day and you came home and of course it wasn't there, or were all the windows shut and hey, how did that cat get out? So it would be interesting to have a bit more background to that. I've been around too long to discount something just as that's what it is on face value. The more I see of this world, the more I realise that things are have a message, and they're meant to be, and the amount of coincidences grows less and less. Thank you for sharing that with me. Remember that a cat has a connection to the fourth dimension and higher, but a dog has a connection to the fifth dimension and higher. So anything that's in the guise of a cat can manipulate, maneuver, and understand the energies in a different way than, say, a dog would. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Simon. And from a shamanic point of view, shamans would perhaps consider this to be a power animal, and you'd need to look at the message of what the cat brings as the the symbology. And also it reminds me of other stories where people have shared on the internet, where they've had a bird that's come into their life, or a squirrel or something else, and that's brought them immense joy, even if it's just for a short time. There was one where a lady had a bumblebee. She found a bumblebee that was nearly dying, and she fed it and watered it and looked after it because it didn't have any wings, so it couldn't fly, and she created a little home for it and gave it flowers, and it lived a very happy life and loved to just walk on her hand, and it loved to walk on her face, and they had a really beautiful relationship for the whole of the lifetime of that bumblebee. And I think it's incredibly important when people connect with nature like this, and when something chooses to be with them for a whole lifetime like this bumblebee, or for a few days like the cat. And I personally see that there's a great deal of symbolism in that.
Well, I've never heard the bumblebee story before. I mean, that's just like...
It's incredible. On the internet somewhere.
But no, I fully accept it, and I can see how it would work. Yes, thank you for that. I mean, you know, we mustn't always think about magic as magic. There is the shamanic connection to the earth. And I mean, there was one time, Becky wasn't there, I remember I contacted you and I said I was walking on, what was it, a badger or something I'd seen and popped up. Put its head to a fence and it was a badger. And,
oh, yes.
And I said
no,
to you...
No, there was a hare.
Hare, that's right.
Yeah, you were going to allotment and
yeah,
there was a hare.
Yeah, that's right. So I remember saying, oh, what was the shamanic connection with that one? So yes, I accept that, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Dahlia or Dahlia says, hi Simon, so glad you are back on air. You keep on speaking about the importance of bloodlines for reptilians, Illuminati, Anunnaki. Did they never have problems with genetic mutation through interbreeding? I have travelled much and seen in the Orthodox Jewish families in Jerusalem, as well as in rich Saudis, so many disabled children because they were always within intermarriage, within families.
Well, one line was obviously religious, and those who follow their religion very strongly absolutely, you know, don't want to mix the blood. They absolutely want to keep it, you know, as they see it. The reptilians is not a religion, it's a way of life. Now, you could say a religion is a way of life, and I'm sure there are many people that would say that, but it's not a religion for the reptilians. It is their culture, it's their rule, it's their law, but it's not a religious law. It's simply to maintain power and control through a family line. Whether that inbreeding, if we can use that word, creates disabled people, I'm not able to say. I'm not qualified on that. Something I really don't know about. What I do know is that a pedigree cat generally lives shorter length of time than your average moggy, who's got as many mixed and wild genetics as is possible. The cat I lost, Ingmar, was only 12. Whereas there's another older cat who's a moggy here who's 16. So whether you can translate that into the human world, I don't know. So difference between human religion and command and control of the reptilians. But it's the same thing in the end, I suppose. Thank you. Can I just now, Becky, read out my list?
Mm-hmm.
Gone over the hour. But I'm going to read out my list to those who have so kindly donated to keep the show on the road, to keep it ticking on. I want to thank you all personally. And those of you who perhaps I've missed off inadvertently, you know, thank you. So, Sheena, Alfredo, Charlie, Robin, Shari, I think it's Whiteless, Rick, Martin, Drumset, Jeff, SD Van, Klaus, Simon, Bonnie, Valerie, Leslie, Linda, Enrique, Harlan, Keith, Julius, Glenn, Evelyn, Kevin, Sue, Christopher, Katrin, Edgar, Linus, Michael, Tina, Elisa, Shamsa, Hans, nearly finished, Natalie, Isabel, Bernard, Cheryl, AJ, this is a difficult one, I do my best, Max Akegu, oh God, Max Akegufs, I'm sorry if I've got your name wrong, I'll just call you Max, Sylvia, HWD, Nathan and Sheena. To all of you who have very kindly sent anything from 50p, was it half a dollar, to whatever, it really helps. You know, just like everyone else, I have to have a phone, I have to have a car, I have to have the internet, I have to have light, I have to have heating. But, you know, I choose to stick my head above the parapet and to, you know, say what I have to say. And often what I have to say is not particularly liked by the elite. And so your donations allow me to continue to do that. I was, you know, somebody who'd written in and said, well, you know, you could do any job. I don't know if I've talked about this before, but it made me smile. I'd said, you know, quite genuinely that I would find it very difficult now to find a job because people would either be lent on not to give me a job or they would just look at the website and think I don't want him. And somebody who obviously doesn't like me, I do look at some of the comments, you know, that were written. And he'd written and said, well, you could get a cleaning job, you know, don't have to get a government job. Never actually said I wanted a job with the government, really, I don't think, unless it was on completely different terms than we have now. Cleaning job. Actually, I did a cleaning job back in London when I had a contract and the contract had ended and I had 3 months before I could find another contract. And I took a job cleaning an office block in central London, which was like a 5:30 in the morning start for 2 hours. I did that. And back in the good old days, when London had a Greater London Council, I was a relief school caretaker. And I did that. So I have never asked anybody to do something that I haven't done myself or I'd be prepared to do. And I used to be not a manager as such, but in local authorities. You didn't have people come round to change light bulbs. You had to do it yourself. And, you know, I would do that, change a light bulb. You know, there's the boss standing on the desk changing a light bulb. So I'm not frightened to turn my hand to it. And people who make rather ridiculous comments like that clearly don't know me. So that was that. But for those of you who do know me, thank you. I'm going to take one more question and then I guess we could call it a day.
Okay, thanks. Alina from Switzerland says, thank you and JP for your work. It's a bit old now. Which are the best things, actions that normal people could do to support the evolution of mankind at this point in history?
Well, JP did support my work because he ran a radio show and, you know, that's just the way it was.
Mm.
Everybody can do what he or she thinks is right. Look, if you've got young children, you just cannot afford to put your head too far above the parapet because the system has a very strict control system. And if you, you know, talk about flying saucers and little this and that, then they'll try and take the kids off you. And that's happened in Great Britain and in America. I don't know about other countries, but I know that for a fact. So I've only ever asked people to do what they're comfortable to do and not to put themselves or anyone else at danger or risk. But the best way is to imagine that you are modelling in terms of good behaviour, good practice, the way that you would like to be dealt with. So model that out to people. So if you're in a traditional work environment and everyone's a little bit nasty and a little bit on edge and, you know, it's just a nasty culture, well, don't get sucked into that. Demonstrate how you are. And people can then be forced to reflect and mirror back on themselves to challenge their own behaviour. So that's one way that you can do that without bringing any negative attention on yourself. The other ways is to join Connecting Consciousness, try and form a group, take part in meditations, debates, share knowledge. You know, if one person's, you're relatively close to each other and one person's got a plot of land, why not let people come on and grow their own vegetables? You know, we don't have to be like a commune and, you know, share everything. You can have individual plots if that's what people want. It really doesn't matter. But it's about empowering and supporting, because we all go through times when we need support and help. So if you're in a group, then, you know, it's not like everyone's been drained at this, you know, at the same time. You can actually get that help on a rolling program, you know, support, advice and love. And that's a lot easier than facing and fighting stuff on your own. You might want to be, you know, a healer. You might be able to do things that put into practice your beliefs. And again, you're helping out. You might not be interested in people really. You might be interested in trees or plants or something like that. So you could do work with the earth in that nature. And I think that you need to find an expression for what you believe in and put your own love into that. And then hopefully other people will come into contact with what you've done. And it acts as a counterbalance to the terrible grind of this control system that we're under. And any spark of light that any of us can show in this darkness at the moment, it's always the darkest point before the light. We've always said about that, and we're, you know, just on the verge now of breaking free. So this is perhaps the hardest point in many ways. Anything that we can do, no matter how small, will contribute towards the greater good. So thank you. I want to thank everybody. Thank you for listening. Let's hope that technically this goes out without too many issues and problems. Thank you to Becky. You know, thank you to everybody who wrote in regarding Ingmar the cat. I'm glad that I was able to celebrate him by Andy, who does all the web work for me, putting his picture up. People have asked, will there be a replacement? Well, there won't be a replacement for Ingmar, but there might be something coming along fairly soon. And if we get new addition to the cat family here, then I'm sure that it will make a debut. So God bless to everyone. A lot of light and a lot of strength. And just keep on. See you later. Bye-bye.